Chema. So we enter into chapter 17 of the Gita and the 42nd chapter of Essays on the Gita, which means chapter 18 of the second series of book 2. And the chapter is titled The Gunas, Faith and Works. So we have already been touched upon the Gospel of Works, and also basically Sri Krishna has just told us very roughly about the three gunas. Now he elaborates upon it and its importance in the quality of our life, the quality of our action. Because everything derives from that. So normally we see only quantity. We look at things outside and we say, oh, this work is wonderful. This work, we assign the value of the work based on quantity. But again, there is a qualitative dimension, and there is something even behind the qualitative dimension. And that's what Sri Krishna is pointing towards, because man sees the quantity and the divine sees the quality. That's what gives the value, both to life as well as to works. So then, first of all, Sri Krishna, actually it starts with a question from Arjuna, that there are people who don't know the scripture, who don't do according to the right method, but they have faith. So he asks very naturally, very evidently, that what happens to them? Because up till now, Sri Krishna has revealed that one is action done according to the law of desires. That obviously belongs to the inferior layer of humanity. At the vital level, when people are acting according to, whatever they wish to, whatever they desire, according to their own impulses. So that has to be set aside. If we are still acting under that, then we can might as well forget about yoga. Then there comes the second part of it, that there is a action which is higher than acting according to the desires, and that is the action according to the Shastra. So one is the Rajo Tamogun and the other is the Satugun. Satugun means that according to the Shastra. And Shastra had two aspects of it. One is the outer Shastra. By that it means that, the collective wisdom of the race which is embodied, or a civilization which is embodied in a group of scriptures. So the Shastra enjoins certain things based on what the men, eminent men, have thought over, lived, experienced. So it makes life easy for us. So when we act according to the Shastra, it automatically disciplines the vital nature and the rebellious vital nature, the egoistic nature. So if we look at it, it's very beautiful in a way, because it helps humanity overcome its desires and ego self, which is one of the important elements of the yoga. So we act according to the scripture. So this is one part. But there is also a Shastra which is inside, which is unfolding in the individual. So what is meant by that is that there are individuals who feel that the Shastra is not adequate. It does not answer to all my inner callings, all my inner needs, all my inner will to be. For example, if one wants to realize, to take an example, at least I can say on a very personal note, whatever scriptures I used to read, when they said that the goal is moksha, so automatically it seemed to me that if this is the highest goal, then it's not like not for me. Because it's a selfish aim at the end of the day. So the Shastra is not answering the faith and will to be. And the will to be and the faith within is that if there is divine in the world, there should be a possibility of perfection here upon earth, in terrestrial life, in humanity. There must be a possibility like that. So, of course, Sri Aurobindo came, with the answer. But where there is a different faith and will to be, an individual has a right, almost, to go away from the Shastra. Because the Shastra doesn't answer to his inmost need. Now, when he goes against the Shastra, it's a very beautiful evolutionary process. So, he may go against the Shastra purely out of revolt, Rajasic revolt. Not because he is a deep understanding. For example, there are a lot of people who react to certain ideas in a Shastra, which may not be relevant now, but that doesn't mean the whole of Shastra has become useless. So a lot of people today, for example, very rightly, they don't appreciate the idea of Chaturvarna, the fourfold order of society. And they have and based on that, they do not want to go with the Shastra, but they revolt. So they revolt not only against the Shastra, but into the whole body of literature. They fall back into the Rajasic mode. The Shastras are useless. I'll do whatever I feel like doing and whichever way I want to go. So there could be a Rajasic revolt. And Rajasic revolt has only one utility. It points out the defect in the Shastra. Because these people have noticed something which is For example, when people say that why did Ram abandon Sita? Now, in that context, you can understand it. But in today's context, you can't do that. You can't say that because humanity also evolves. And then there are some who may obey the Shastra purely in a tamasic way. So there could be a Rajasic revolt and a tamasic obedience. By tamasic obedience is meant that because my parents, my ancestors were doing this puja, I must continue doing it. So between the two, Sri Aurobindo very clearly says the Rajasic revolt is better than a tamasic obedience. Because at least therein is it life. There is in it urge to move, the urge to progress. So these are the two. But however, either a Rajasic revolt or even a tamasic going away from the Shastra, because Shastra is sometimes too many things. You can't follow them. So there is the inertia in man says, no, I can't live according to the Shastra, according to the written word of God, and I want to just carry my life in my own little way. Either ways, in these two states, he is not going to arrive anywhere. So you have to go back to Sattva. So there can be an enlightened, not revolt, but breaking off from the Shastra. And Sri Aurobindo gives the classic example is of Buddha. So Buddha saw that all the Vedic scriptures, there was a profound truth which people had forgotten. And they were so much engaged in outer rituals. And they felt that the rituals are everything. So Buddha breaks away from that. And he starts something very new, which during the time of Buddha, it was like a rebellion. They didn't know where to put him. So many of them declared him avedic, that he is against the Vedas, which is not true when we look at it from the deeper perspective, because Buddha did use the word Arya. He wanted to create human beings who are really of great value. He understood the suffering with which human beings are occupied. He understood, he had deep compassion. So in a way, he found the Shastras inadequate, and he found that many of the people in the name of Shastras were simply doing rituals to satisfy their desires, and they were propagating a kind of division in the society, and so he broke away. But that is a sattvic kind of breaking away from the Shastra. In a way, we may say that Sri Aurobindo also, like people come to the ashram, one of the things they ask, can I have non-veg? Or sometimes they come to know that eggs are allowed, so they have a problem. Or in corner house, on days, occasions, chicken is allowed. So they can't understand it because they want to follow the Shastra very, very blindly. But both Sri Aurobindo and the mother have come out of that frame, but in a very enlightened way. Because the Shastra doesn't cater to all the needs and understandings of the people. Another example is when Park Guest House was created. So that time the hippie movement had started. So one of the reasons why the Park Guest House was created, if you see a little away from, little away means about a kilometer away from the ashram, it was to accommodate these people who followed no norms. Well, they would have long hair, they would have their own way of living, sometimes not so much into cleanliness. And yet the mother used a word for them, they are barbarians of the new world. Because they have broken things. And they don't know the way. Similarly, there were people who took to drugs. They were out of Rajasic revolt. You see all the music of that time, the songs of that time. So they were given a place because this Shastra should be so vast that it should be able to take these people and also show them the path. this was the larger understanding framework in which we see Sri Aurobindo and the mother operating. So they didn't create a very narrow, small framework which was existing. If we go back 100 years back or even 50 years back, for example, widow remarriage was still a problem. I mean, if a lady lost her husband, she was to lead a life of wearing white, staying in a temple, not engaged with society. Now this has to go because, you know, it's the demand of the time, forward march. So there can be a luminous, enlightened, sattvic breaking away from the Shastra. And then he goes one step further that within the human being, his faith and will to be can give birth to a new Shastra, a new way of life. We see in Sri Aurobindo, when he, in Savitri, he asks the Divine Mother. And again, Savitri, when she asks the Supreme Being, that my spirit's liberty I ask for all. Now this is not, Shastra doesn't enjoin that, you know. You have to have Adhikar Bhed, you have to have certain kind of humanity. But the opening the door to all is beyond the Shastra. So that is the other part. So he says, as is a man's faith. So Gita says, one of his many Mahavakyas are, if you want to ask Arjun what is the value of a man, he says, man is his faith. And in faith, he includes the will to be. Because whatever is our faith, that we strive to become. If my faith is that wealthy, wealth means success. Naturally, my will to become will be to become a wealthy person. So faith implies will to be. If I believe in Karl Marx doctrine, then my faith is that that is the way you can create a better world or whatever world order. So I will follow that. So whatever is a man's faith, not his outer actions. Outer actions derive the value from the faith. First thing the Gita reveals is this, that as is a man's faith, so is the man. And in fact, it goes on to say, as Sri Aurobindo also says in the synthesis, whatever is your faith and will to be, that you will end up realizing. At one place, there is a letter where he says, if you have faith that it is possible to heal naturally, you will end up realizing ways and means of healing naturally. At least for yourself, you will realize. So faith and will is so important. This is what he describes. Then he starts describing that how the gunas operate. Because faith is central. But faith itself takes the hue of the gunas based on where we stand in the developmental hierarchy. So there are three gunas and there is faith also can be threefold. So for example, there is a tamasic faith. Tamasic faith is where there is no real understanding, but just kind of belief. Like you pray here, you will get a result. It's a tamasic faith. Then there is a rajasic faith, which is based on, which is like a transactional relationship. We can have the same relation with Mother and Sri Aurobindo, a threefold faith. And then there is a sattvic faith, which is luminous, which understands things in the true way, right way. And there is something which is beyond the sattva that he will come to later. So this he speaks about the threefold faith. And then he speaks about the three aspects of work. All action includes tapa. Tapa or tapasya is concentration of energies for a certain purpose. Without tapa there can be no action. Even if I have to drink a glass of water, there has to be some kind of tapasya involved. In the sense I am gathering my energies, putting some focus, very small. If I have to travel to a distance, some kind of tapasya is involved in life. So tapa is concentration of energies. Then there is dana. Dana is the giving of energies. Actually, if we get rid of all the immediate meaning. So we are giving energies. Any action involves giving of energies. So tapa is, or asceticism is a gathering of energies. Dana is the giving of energies. And then there is yajna. Yajna is the lifting up of these energies to their highest possibility. So these are the three things, and based on the guna, they derive their value. So this is what we will read, which is the crux of the chapter. Okay. So on page 478, page 477 is the chapter. The gunas, faith and works, but we are going to read from here and there. And page 478. So faith is where we lend the assent of our being. That's how he describes faith. And this assent of the being, its conscious acceptance and will to believe and realize, may be called by the name which the Gita gives to it, his faith, Shraddha. So I believe in this, I accept it, and I want to live by it. And on this same passage, in proportion as I have a sincerity and completeness of faith in it and an intensity of will to live according to that faith, I can become what it proposes to me. I can shape myself into an image of that right or an exemplar of that perfection. So let's say if I have faith in Sri Aurobindo and the mother, their teachings, there is an acceptance and a will to live according to that. Depending on my sincerity, I will arrive at that. As simple as that. And then he says, but we see also that there is a freer tendency in man, other than the leading of his desires and other than his will to accept the law, the fixed idea, the safe governing rule of the Shastra. So this is where we see the breakaway tendencies from the Shastra. And Sri Aurobindo gives the example of Buddha. He also gives the example of Christ replacing the law of Moses. So there is the law of Moses which has its own place and meaning, but Christ comes and replaces it and gives a greater Shastra. So after that we come back to the main aspects of this chapter. Where he describes, page 481, third line from above. And everything depends on the nature of his faith, the thing in himself or in the universal soul, of which he is a portion or manifestation. If he is tamasic, I'm skipping a couple of lines. If he is tamasic, obscure, clouded, if he has an ignorant faith, an inept will, he will reach nothing true and will fall away to his lower nature. So we may have faith in the right, in the divine, but it may be a very ignorant faith that divine is a kind of wish-fulfilling tree, whatever it be, the divine will do it for me. So if he is lured by false rajasic lights, he can be carried away by self-will into bypaths that may lead to morass or precipice. In either case, his only chance of salvation lies in a return of sattva. So what does it mean, return of sattva? That instead of just doing things ignorantly, like there are people who, the moment they pass before a temple, they will do something or hold their ears or do, and it's like they visited. This is an ignorant kind of thing. It leads you to nowhere. Maybe gives a little satisfaction, something inside. Then there is a rajasic faith. They will go inside the temple and they want something from God. So this is a rajasic light, and this ultimately may lead one day to the precipice, because somebody was other day asking, very interesting question, that every time my father has prayed something to the mother grants him. Now he is praying that I should get married and I don't want to get married. What should I do? I am afraid that his wish will be fulfilled by the mother, the desire. So I had to send a passage from mother's writing that the mother is not a desire fulfilling tree. She has said that things come from concealed desires and they get fulfilled. And sometimes, because desire has its own force and intensity, divine may or may not intervene. Ultimately, everything comes from the divine. But when you do this, and he says, ki, if I say no, he will threaten me by harming himself. Now imagine that there is a devotee who believes all his desires are being fulfilled by the mother. Now if a grown-up child doesn't want to marry and wants to, in fact, she has very good ideas of a higher kind. So he is ready to give away his own life. So why? Because this kind of a rajasic transaction relationship with the divine. And you start constructing at one place. Mother says, it's not me whom they love. They've created an image of myself. It's very touching, very powerful. And it is that they are in love with. So there is an image. Mother will do it, mother is doing it, everything. But what is the sattvic way? Sattvic way is I'll do it because this is the thing to be done. Whether something comes as a result or not, it's not important. I do it because it's an act of my love and service to the Divine Mother. Not because everybody is doing it, not because it's customary to do it, but because this is my, it is the duty which one must do. That's how the sattva operates. This is my duty, I should do it. It's the right thing to do. Of course, there is a state beyond it which the Gita takes us to. At least Shurvindu takes us to. On page 482, there is a very beautiful, this phrase that I was referring to, page 482, 5-6 lines from above. Whatever is that will, faith or constituting belief in him, he is that and that is he. Shraddha mayo yam purusho yo yash shraddha sa evascha. And then he translates this, if we look into this pregnant saying a little closely, we shall find that this single line contains implied the modern gospel of pragmatism. Pragmatism is that, okay, all this is fine, theory, philosophy is fine, but at the end of the day, practically tell me what applies. So Gita is telling us the most profound practical truth. Whatever is your faith and will to be, that you will end up realizing. And it is something which is inside. It is not something which is seen outside. That is what the divine says. So very often people say, why was the divine partial to Arjuna? Why did he choose Arjuna? So if you look at Arjuna, he may be, for whatever 100 things, they were great people. But Arjuna had a complete faith and surrender to Sri Krishna. And very luminously. That he is the one whom I love. He is the one who is my bestest friend. And he is the one, whatever he says, I am ready to obey him. That Sri Krishna has seen. Other people cannot see that. Bhishma is strong and mighty. Vidur is, you know, Dharma himself. So is Yudhishthir. But here is this man whose very stuff of being is nothing else but Krishna. So there is this aspect of faith. And then of course he says that, well, there is a universal aspect. We need not go into that. We'll come to. So we come to 484, which is where the chapter 17 of the Gita actually starts. So this is a background commentary. So 484, and what then will be the character of this action? The Gita states three main elements of the work we have to do, kartavyam, karma, and these three are sacrifice, giving, and ascesis. So we have all these three and then according to the guna. And that he describes on toward the end. All action involves a giving of what we are or have, an expenditure which is the price of that achievement, acquisition or becoming, dana. Okay, few lines above. For all dynamic action, all kinesis of the nature involves a voluntary or an involuntary tapasya or ascesis. And then all action involves to a sacrifice to elemental or to universal powers or to the supreme master of our works. The question is whether we do these things inconsciently, passively, or at best with an unintelligent, ignorant, half-conscient will. So that's what makes it sattvic, rajasic or tamasic. And then he describes food. So food, the Gita describes, like, he starts with saying that there are three kinds of food. So food is one extreme. And he'll go on to speech, the other extreme. Everything is of three kinds and all else in between. So what are the foods which are sattvic? And the sattvic natures will naturally prefer these foods. Because why? Because they naturally increase health in the being. Our food, for example, page 485, the Gita tells us is either sattvic, rajasic or tamasic. The sattvic temperament in the mental and physical body turns naturally to the things that increase the life, increase the inner and outer strength, nourish at once the mental, vital and physical force and increase the pleasure and satisfaction and happy condition of the mind and life and body. Now he gives, now you know, we don't need to read all the WhatsApp and the latest research and all that, you know, because Sri Krishna is telling us what kind of food. And see, he's not demarcating between veg and non-veg or organic and what is it called nowadays? Vegan. He's not describing all that. He is simply describing based on the three gunas. So what is the food which is sattvic in nature? Succulent. So most fruits will fall in that category. And soft. And firm. And satisfying. Very simple. Satisfying means it's tasty, it's good to the palate, not very strong. And it's soft, like, you know, you take simple rice and dal, which we get in the dining room. You take vegetables, you take fruits. Very naturally it becomes a sattvic food. Milk, satisfying. The rajasic temperament prefers naturally food that is violently sour. Now you see, meat will fall in the category of rajasic food. So sour, pungent, hot, acrid, rough and strong and burning. The ailments that increase ill health and distempers of the mind and body. Simple. The tamasic temperament takes a perverse pleasure in cold. I hope ice cream is not included, but it very much includes it. Cold, impure, stale, rotten or tasteless food, or even accepts like the animals the remnants half eaten by others. So this is the, he says that food you can classify according to that. By this criteria, if you see our dining room food in the ashram, I'm sure here also, it's basically sattvic food. So it is very good, and the sattvic temperament will naturally prefer it. Now he talks about sacrifice. The tamasic sacrifice, now in the Gita we see sattva, rajas, tamas, and Sri Aurobindo starts from tamas, rajas, sattva, because it's an ascending order. The tamasic sacrifice is work which is done without faith, without, that is to say, any full conscious idea and acceptance and will towards the thing nature yet compels us to execute. So Sri Aurobindo was asked this question by Niruddha in one of the conversations, that what about M, who is working? He's a paid worker. So will he also become supramental? He says, oh, you mean a supramental M, simply because he's working. It doesn't work like that. It's like a person may work because nature has, for whatever reason, compelled. So it doesn't mean that just because one is working with a very tamasic, there are a lot of workers also who are working. Some may have a luminous faith, but there are many who are, it's a job for them, maybe a good surrounding, good atmosphere. There is nothing like an automatic, simply because they are working, therefore they are uplifted. So there is a state of tamas. A lot of people may do it mechanically. Some people stay on, for example, because their parents have been here. Some people stay on because they have grown up here. Now that doesn't mean that necessarily there is inside that faith and will to be. I have met people who have grown up here, who have, you know, studied, but they don't have faith. It's so strange. And some are very honest about it and therefore they find their own path. So if you have an ignorant tamasic kind of, simply because it's a comfort zone, so that's not what the divine takes into cognizance, all these elements. There will be no, this is the tamasic, to avoid some other greater difficulty which may arise from not doing it or from any other tamasic motive. So we may like to stay on, let us say in the ashram or Auroville, because life is relatively simpler, relatively easy. You don't have to take the challenge of, you know, life. And you have a basic comfort zone. Now, if we have that attitude, then it's a tamasic sacrifice. Nature is extracting. You're going for work, everything you're doing. But there's no clarity of understanding of what, you know, the whole yoga is. You're just living continuously, but it doesn't help. And there are letters of Sri Aurobindo very clearly. There will be no giving of food in the sacrifice, and that act in the Indian ritual is symbolic of the element of helpful giving inherent in every action, that is real sacrifice. So what is this giving? The food, giving of the food is that when you do any work, one is, okay, I have to do a 9-to-5 job. So you are doing your job and you come away. There is other where you are giving, where you are trying to help everyone around. You know, there are people who want to understand something, know something. You are going out of the, as they say, call of your duty. And therefore, when you have that helpful nature, when you are doing it, keeping in mind the others, and you are keeping in mind the divine himself, that for him we are doing. So it cannot be restricted to 9-to-5. I cannot get up at 5 o'clock and say, well, I'm going because my time is over, somebody else has to do it. Because you know it is for the divine that you are doing it. So then the dana in the work is correct. So he's saying that there will be no giving of food in the sacrifice. And few lines below he describes it. The work will be done without the dakshina. So we have the concept of dakshina. What is dakshina? The much needed giving or self-giving to the leaders of the sacrificial action. Meaning thereby, if I'm working in the ashram or in Auroville, I'm not doing a favor to the divine. It is the divine who has done a favor to me. I must give him something in return. If I can give myself fully, wonderful. But even if I cannot give something fully, at least that this is an opportunity Mother has given me to serve her. And therefore, I take this action as a means of service. So that's what she's saying. The work will be done without the dakshina, the much needed giving or self-giving. To whom? To the leaders of the sacrificial action. Whether to the outward guide and helper of our work or to the veiled or manifest Godhead within us. And then it will be done without the mantra. So what is the mantra? It's not like everything we have to say a mantra and do the work. How Sri Aurobindo clarifies it? It will be done without the mantra, without the dedicating thought, which is the sacred body of our will and knowledge, lifted upwards to the Godheads we serve by our sacrifice. That means naturally, very naturally within us should be Ma. It's for the Mother. And when we do that, we will not need anything in return. If at all we need something in return, it will be a growing closeness to the Mother. We will not need a material reward. We will not need other things because we are giving it for the sake of the Mother, not for somebody else. So I remember when somebody had come to the ashram and his suitcase key was lost. So he went to make a duplicate key. There used to be a department at that time. I don't know whether they have it now or not. So the person sitting out there, he made the key and opened the suitcase. So he said, thank you so much. How much I have to see? No charge. So he said, now give me the... He said, no, I have to make a duplicate key. So he said, why? I don't need the duplicate key. He says, but I am not making for you. These are the Mother's instruction. I am doing it for Mother. That you give it, make a duplicate key, because in case he loses, at least he has another key at his disposal. He says, I am not doing for you that you have opened the suitcase. Okay, thank you, tata, bye-bye. It is being done for the Mother, not to cater to your demands. Now you see the difference. That's where is the dakshina is involved. The mantra is involved. The dedicating thought. The dedicating thought is not that I am serving a human master or a human being, but I am serving the divine guide. Then, the next passage. The Rajasic man offers his sacrifice to lower godheads or to perverse powers, the Yakshas, the keepers of wealth, or to the Asuric and Rakshasic forces. So meaning thereby that we are doing the work but from egoistic personal desire. So the desire may be very gross, money. Thankfully in ashram at least there is no money. So Mother has said, gone. You can't do the work for money. Finished. So, but then there are subtle rewards. I may get close to the powerful people. I may occupy a certain chair. Human mind, so Mother has tried to clarify that I don't give positions, I give work. But human mind starts believing. So when you do that, it's a Rajasic sacrifice. It may give you the chair, but take away God from your heart. That's the problem. It may give the chair. It may give you certain outer power, but it takes away the real thing, the yoga. So here, that Sri Aurobindo reminds us, although it is ostensibly given to God or even to the gods, it remains essentially an asuric action. If I am ambitious, whether it's ashram or Auroville or anywhere, now we are talking about where people are actually engaged in so-called divine work. In outside world, it's understood. Though there also, if you do it with a sattvic temperament, as a dedication to the divine, whatever work you are doing, it will be yoga. Whereas here, outwardly, you may be doing it for God. Now, there are people in Math. I remember one of the Swamiji in one of the movements, no need to name the movement. So he was telling me that, you know, there's a big problem. So what is the problem? He says, my senior Swami doesn't talk to me. Why? Because this young fellow is very nice. You know, some people are, and he has read, he's sincere, like in youngsters, no? So people called him for some ribbon cutting ceremony. He went in a very simple approach, but the senior Swami took an offense that when I am present, how come he has been called to do the ribbon cutting? You see, ego. So he says, though it is outwardly being done for God, actually it is an asuric action. So that's how the Gita. It is the inner state, motive and direction which give their value to our works, and not merely the apparent outer direction. And who is the loser or gainer? We ourselves, by our attitude. Because ultimately yoga is about growing closer to the divine. And if I do an action under rajasic and tamasic impulse, I don't grow closer. In fact, I put a veil between myself and the divine. Wherever there is a dominant egoism of our acts, in our acts, there our work becomes a rajasic sacrifice. The true sattvic sacrifice, on the other hand, is distinguished by three signs. So how to know that it's sattvic? First, it is dictated by the effective truth. Effective truth is, let's say in the ashram or Auroville context or any such movement context, I am doing it for mother. I have seen such foolish things sometimes, you know, that people invite a governor. I have seen it actually in some of the centers. Now they are waiting for the governor to come. Actually, that's not the way it should be done. You are doing it for the mother. You have invited the mother. You have called the mother. And take it that mother is here and start the activity. Whether governor comes, doesn't come, if he is bad, if he is good, it's his problem. So many places this kind of a thing happens. And we should be very careful that we are, if we are really doing it for, first is there should be clarity. So first sign is of the sattvic, the dictated by the effective truth. Effective truth is the divine for whom we are doing it. Nobody else. We are not trying to please or impress anyone. Executed according to the vidhi. So what is the vidhi? The right inner state, not, you know, you see suddenly when a so-called, I have seen so many things. They put mother's picture and Shurvindu's picture on the dais and on the floor of the dais, of course, nicely propped up, and then they give a chair for the speakers. So I had to say, I can't sit. They are right there. You want me to sit on a pedestal which is higher than them. That's not the vidhi. You cannot have a pedestal of the divine lower than where you are seated. It's basic thing. So what to do? I said, I know you can't move this arrangement, so I'll come down the stage and I'll speak from there. So there is a vidhi, there is a right arrangement of things. So that's where the effective truth dictates it, and there is a vidhi, a proper method of doing it. The right principle, so there is a principle behind it. It's not just putting a picture for the sake of putting a picture because we are having a Sri Aurobindo program, let's put a picture. Don't put a picture, that's fine. You don't need to put a picture. But if you put a picture, there has to be something like, you know, you have invoked the presence. So after that, you can't be doing this. So there is a vidhi, the right principle, the exact method and rule, the just rhythm and law of our works. So here I keep saying, I say, imagine if you have called Mother and Shurbita, if they are actually seated. Now imagine how stupid it will look that you are waiting for the governor to come. You start the program and you don't even have to invite. For what purpose? Because this is where we have to be clear about these things. Their true functioning, their dharma. So this is the first thing. Secondly, it is executed with a mind concentrated and fixed on the idea of thing to be done as a true sacrifice imposed on us by the divine law. Mother has given me this work there at this point of time. That should be the governing idea and nothing else. How impressive the whole thing is. Some people keep speaking about their own achievements. It's so gross, so crude, almost vulgar. Because the first principle of Karma Yoga is that you are not the doer. One of the first principles, the divine who is doing it. So this is where the second thing is, that should become more and more impersonal. So he says that the more impersonal the motive of the action and the temperament of the force put out in it, the more sattvic is its nature. So it should be not, I am a doer, I am somebody important, and you know, being introduced and people, oh, he is the one who is managing, looking after, all this is irrelevant. So this is the second part. And finally, it is offered to the gods without any reservation. It is acceptable to the divine powers by whom, for they are his mass and personalities, the master of existence, governs the universe. Because the Gita speaks about the gods. Sri Aurobindo says, well, by gods is meant the mass and personality of the divine master. So the work is only offered to the divine master. What people think, do not think, is really not important. So this is where the, you know, comes the sacrifice. Then there is tapasya. On next page 488. Tamasic tapasya is that which is pursued under a clouded and deluded idea, hard and obstinate in its delusion, maintained by an ignorant faith in some cherished falsehood, performed with effort and suffering, imposed on oneself in pursuit of some narrow and vulgar, egoistic object, empty of relation to any true or great aim. So meaning thereby that, you know, people believe that because I am doing this work, I am great. Big delusion. Simply because we don't know. A person who may be quietly, you know, just taking care of the grass or cleaning vessels in the dining room, maybe much inwardly developed. If you read Gangadharanji's 108 names of Sri Aurobindo and, you know, the kind of experiences he had, the kind of surrender he had to the mother, it's just amazing. Gangadharanji, otherwise one could never, looking at him, understand who he is or what he is. And how in Nimhans when he's there, how mother would every night come and give to coconut water, and you know, she came as a young girl, nursing girl, and later on mother says, yes, I used to come there every day. He had to go. He couldn't contain that pressure of the supramental powers that were entering inside. And so he had an imbalance because of which he had to go, but then he came back. So there are different kinds of tapasya. So delusion can be that I am the doer, I am an important person. If I am not there, how will the work be carried on? There are people who live in this kind of delusion. I am very important for the mother's work. And there are people who will strengthen that delusion to get favors. Are without you, how can you? Sri Krishna in the Gita in the beginning clears his Arjuna's mind. He says, you know what, Arjuna, I have decided. I am giving you a chance, your privilege. You don't take it, I'll yet fulfill my will. But there are some people who believe that they are indispensable. So tamasic tapasya is full of these delusions. And hence it is nothing but a darkness in the mind and nature, a vulgar narrowness and ugliness in the doing, or a brutish instinct or desire in the aim or in the motive feeling. Sometimes a very narrow feeling. We are someone very special. We belong to an elite group. Why? Because, you know, I am in the ashram, mother I'm close to mother, and what are these ignorant human beings? So that should not be the attitude. Sense of superiority is foreign to the temperament of a sadhak, because he has to see the divine in everyone and everywhere. Rajasic energisms of ascesis are those which are undertaken to get honor and worship from men for the sake of personal distinction and outward glory and greatness, or from some other of the many motives of egoistic will and pride. The one example that I remember here is Amrita. And no wonder mother told about him, the first and the only and the last manager of the ashram. Everybody, somewhere or the other, this got into the head that I am someone special. But Amrita was just the same with everyone. Never this impression. And he's the manager, I mean the first manager of the ashram, just imagine. And mother said, there cannot be another Amrit. That kind of feeling, that nowhere there is that I am special, say special honor, privilege, none of these things. Some of these old timers had that. Even Dhyuman Bhai I have seen like that, you know. Without that feeling of being special, which creates barriers between you and others. So this is the Rajasic, and on page 489, Sattvic tapasya is that which is done with the highest enlightened faith as a duty deeply accepted, or for some ethical or spiritual or other higher reason, and with no desire for any external or narrowly personal fruit in the action. It is of the character of self-discipline and asks for self-control and a harmonizing of one's nature. So if you are given a work, you go there, sit there, even if there is no work. Because that's the duty to be done. And you remember the Divine Mother. There are moments when there is nothing outwardly happening. It doesn't matter. This is the work given to you. It's a duty. Be there at that point of time and remember the Divine inside. Or if you have some other something. But that's your station. That's your place where Mother has allotted you to go. So it needs self-control. Like coming on time. Simple thing. So in ashram we have timings. And it's so important. Because just the act of coming on time and going on time requires self-control and self-disciplining. You may not have work all the time. Doesn't matter. But that's the place where Mother has asked you to be. So it becomes a sattvic tapasya. Because it's a tapasya to sit at a place even when there is no work and your mind is running here and there. You have to control all that and say, no, this is my time here. Of course, if there is some work really important, that's a different thing altogether. So there are three kinds of sattvic ascesis according to the Gita. First comes the physical, the ascesis of outward act. Under this header especially mentioned worship and reverence of those deserving reverence. So there is the tapasya of the body, tapasya of the speech, and tapasya of the mind. So what is the tapasya of the body? You should have reverence toward those who deserve to be, you know, revered. Cleanliness, inwardly and outwardly. The action, cleanness of the person, the action and the life. Candid dealing, not hiding something, saying something else. Sexual purity and avoidance of killing and injury to others. So this is the tapasya of the body. And this one can write and put it in one's, wherever, and put it into practice. Next is ascesis of speech. So what should be our speech like? And that consists in the study of scripture. It's very interesting. One of the simple ways to cultivate positive thoughts is to study scriptures. Because this is going in your backup data. It's going feeding, you're feeding the software of the mind. So after some time, they overwrite on your original software. So this is a method I often recommend when people ask how to get positive thoughts. So read the Gita, read Swami Vivekananda, read of course Sri Aurobindo and the Mother. So automatically, because now that is the data going inside which is going to rewrite your program or overwrite, as the language I think they use in computer, what has been written, and these kind of thoughts automatically come. So this is ascesis of speech. because this is the receptive aspect of speech. Then it continues, kind, true and beneficent speech. Don't say something which is going to be hurtful, which is not going to help anyone or in the divine work. And third is, careful avoidance of words that may cause fear, sorrow and trouble to others. So very simple, again, something to be noted. And finally, there is the ascesis of mental and moral perfection, and that means purifying of the whole temperament, gentleness, Surbindo, perfect gentleman, gentleness, and a clear and calm gladness of mind, self-control and silence. So all this leads to a degree of inner development, purity, through which the divine action can pour, the action becomes godlike, and the temperament also becomes more and more uplifted and godlike. And page 490, as with tapasya, all giving also is of an ignorant tamasic, an ostentatious rajasic, or a disinterested and enlightened sattvic character. The tamasic gift is offered ignorantly with no consideration of the right conditions of time, place and object. You will see it's like, you know, people collect a lot of clothes and just send it like that. Somebody will wear it, somebody will use it. That's not the way to give things. There is no thought which has gone behind. Or there may be a rajasic thought that I am doing a good deed. Somewhere in my list of virtues I am being regarded as a virtuous man. So it doesn't bring us closer to the divine. It doesn't help in the yoga. So the tamasic gift is offered ignorantly with no consideration of the right conditions of time, place and object. It is a foolish, inconsiderate and in reality a self-regarding movement. It's like giving to the beggars, increases the beggars. Nowadays that's why they have made in some places even it's not legal to give to beggars. And it's very different if you are feeling moved from within. In an odd situation. For example, if there is a lady, especially an old lady, who is selling something, don't bargain with her. If there is an old man who is pulling a rickshaw, don't bargain. Don't bargain with anybody, you know, life is so difficult. So that's, you have given a thought behind it. But to just give, like alms, giving alms, that's charity is not a very healthy, helpful charity. Because many of them will drink, go and drink alcohol. Thanks to the GPA now that has stopped. Honestly, it has done one big thing because I have seen it. I used to do this, you know, okay. Then I realized that, you know, his wife would come and complain, sir, why did you give him money? Why? What happened? He has got drunk. So people often reinforce these tendencies unknowingly. So it's like tamasic giving. The rajasic giving is that which is done with regret, unwillingness or violence to oneself or with a personal and egoistic object. Shobindu also reminds us that tamasic tapasya is where there is a violence to yourself, even there. Sleeping on a bed of nails, you know, deliberately wearing a kind of dress or, you know, sleeping on the floor, sleeping on brick as a pillow. A dining room had somebody once in it who would sleep on the floor deliberately. Divine does not ask us to do this. It's not there. No scripture says that you have to do this. If you are a sannyasi, then take sannyas and go. That's different. But even for sannyas, this is not enjoined. Sannyasi is somebody who possesses nothing. So you may carry a bed, sleep on that, but if it is taken away, it's taken away. Don't blame or cry. But this deliberate, it's an asurik tapasya. Standing on one feet, not eating food. So all these are not tamasic tapasyas. And then there is rajasic, and then the sattvic way of giving is to bestow with right reason and goodwill and sympathy in the right conditions of time and place and on the right recipient who is worthy or so whom the gift can be really helpful. So not everything should be given to anyone and everyone. This kind of blindly doing things without giving the right consideration doesn't help either the person who receives it nor the person who is giving it, because it's a thoughtless, mindless action. And when one gives, it should be given to the divine. Don't accept any acknowledgement. Anything one gives, it's gone to the divine. So even if the recipient doesn't accept it, the divine accepts it. That's what Shobhinda says in the synthesis. Equally, when somebody gives you something, receive it coming from the divine. So you are not under any obligation to do something as a favor to the other person. The culmination of the sattvic way of dana, page 491, dana will bring into the action an increasing element of that wide self-giving to others and to the world and to God. Atmadan, atmasamarpan, which is the high consecration of the sacrifice of works enjoined by the Gita. So that's why this concept of charging money for anything was not there originally. Neither the physician nor the teacher, they were not supposed to charge any money. So, but those who received, the scriptures enjoined on them that you better pay as dakshina. Because if you don't pay, then you are the person who have received something and not given. That's where the dakshina comes in. So the society was balanced this way. A physician who charges money, or a teacher who conducts a course and charges money, how can you do that? Because source of knowledge is infinite, the divine. So what will happen to my livelihood? Divine will take care. Yog shem vahamyam. But you're not supposed to. That's why the Brahmins in the society that time, they were not supposed to charge any money. Very strict it was. So what happened to them? Either the king looked after or the people looked after. But there also they had to make sure that what they need, they will keep that. Now of course all that is gone. So, and finally the Gita closes this chapter with what seems at first sight a recondite utterance, Om Tat Sat. So it explains that, well, Sat is all that is good. Sat is existence. So all the deeds which are good, which are done for helping the world and mankind in its forward march is Sat. Sat Karya, Sat Karma. And it is also something which helps the existence, because all things are existence. So that is Sat. Tat is that which is beyond all, for whom we are offering. And Om is the all-containing formula, where the three letters imply the inward, inmost, inner, and the outer consciousness. And together they form the whole truth, the waking, dream, Sushupti, and the Turiya. So Om Tat Sat, triple definition. Om Tat Sat, the triple definition of the Brahman. So Tat is that, indicate the absolute. Sat indicate the supreme and universal existence. So that means all creatures. When we do good to all creatures, we are actually doing Sat Karya. Om is the symbol of the triple Brahman, the outward looking, the inward or subtle, and the super conscient causal Purusha. Each letter A, O, Ma indicates one of these three in ascending order, and the syllable as a whole brings out the fourth stage, Turiya. So this is very simple. So when we say A, so it can go outward. And you say O, so things are going inward. And when you say M, so it's all inmost. So it's very simple to understand that. Outward, inward, and the inmost. So Om is a formula which contains. And because in India it has been for a long time held collectively, so it has been charged with the power. It could have been some other word, but this becomes a very tangible word. So last line. Sat means good and it means existence. Both these things, the principle of good and the principle of reality, must be there behind all the three kinds of action. All good works are Sat, for they prepare the soul for the highest, higher reality of our being. All firm abiding in sacrifice, giving and ascesis, and all works done with that central view as sacrifice, as giving, as ascesis are Sat. That means no personal motives. It has to be done impersonally for the good of all creatures. For they build the basis for the highest truth of our spirit. And because Shraddha is the central principle of our existence, any of these things done without Shraddha is a falsity and has no true meaning or true substance on earth or beyond. The soul's faith, not a mere intellectual belief, but its concordant will to know, to see, to believe, and to do, and be according to its vision and knowledge is that which determines by its power the measure of our possibilities of becoming. So behind all this action, whatever is our faith and will to be, that we will become. Same action. And it is this faith and will turned in all our inner and outer self, nature and action towards all that is highest, most divine, most real and eternal, that will enable us to reach the supreme perfection. Jai Ma.